for a sign to start that summer home refresh finally? Look no further than Blinds.com. Early access to Blinds.com's 4th of July mega sale is happening now. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments with upfront pricing, no showroom markups, and no pushy salespeople in your home. Whether you're a DIY warrior, prefer the white glove treatment, or somewhere in between, Blinds.com makes it easy. Our virtual design experts can help you make the perfect selection on your schedule. Plus, we can even handle everything from measure to install. Style every room effortlessly with classic shutters for living spaces, blackout for bedrooms, motorized options for total convenience, shades for your patio too. With over 25 million windows covered and 40,000 five-star reviews, Blinds.com is the trusted name in custom window treatments, all backed by our 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop early access to Blinds.com's 4th of July mega sale now. Save up to 40% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
The loudest, the biggest, the brashest. New York is its own character in every play.
The bad thing about New York is the pressure. You're always under pressure.
Here are the stories about those plays. It's New York Accent with Damon Amendola.
Because like I said, we didn't know if that was the right thing to do. And looking back on it, it was. But in a situation like that, what's right and wrong? I mean, no one had ever been through anything like this. And we like I said, I mean, there was talk about canceling the rest of the baseball season.
Mike Stanton was a vital cog in the Yankees' not-so-secret weapon of the dynasty from 25 years ago, that locked-down, airtight bullpen. You know, the Bombers always had the magnificent Mariano Rivera to turn off the lights, but the arms to get to Mo were sometimes just as important in holding leads or keeping games close. Mike Stanton was one of those hired guns, a veteran who came over to the Yankees in 97 just as the dynasty was about to click into high gear. He was part of three straight World Series titles and was also on the magical 2001 team. Now, that squad did not win it all, but might have had more mystical October moments than any of the others. 9/11 stopped the season for more than a week and a half, and when the Yankees got into the playoffs, they stared down an 0-2 hole against the A's. Then came the Jeter flip, the 116-win Mariners, the mighty 1-2 punch of Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling, Scott Brosius' home run, Mr. November, and a country charmed by those heroic Yankees playing for a city that had been gutted just a month earlier. On the 22nd anniversary of 9/11, the story of the fairy tale Yanks that took all of us New Yorkers on a carpet ride that fall. This is Mike Stanton's New York Accent.
Mike, how you doing?
D.A., I'm doing well, man. Yeah, just got back last night from Old Timers Day. Was my first time back. I can't believe it's taken me so long to get back, but it won't be my last. Had an absolute blast. The Yankees did it the way the Yankees always do it. They did it upright. We didn't actually play a game, which I was a little upset about that. I was looking forward to getting back on the field. But just a great on-field ceremony, a great video tribute. Most of the guys were there. It was really cool to catch up with everyone because I haven't seen a lot of them in, I mean, decades. So it's been, it was an absolute blast of a weekend, even if the travel really stuck.
Is it ever weird to remember when you were playing and then looking at the old timers that came in for Old Timers Day and now swapping roles and being like, wow, now I'm the guy that they're looking at as Old Timers Day?
It was weird. To tell you the truth, that was one of those things that I didn't know how I was going to react. But I'll tell you what, like I said, I hadn't seen those guys in easy 10, some of them even 20 years. But as soon as you got back, we have such a tight camaraderie back then. We played so well together. We were together so much. We knew each other so well. 5 minutes in, man, it was like we were never apart. So it was something that that I'll cherish for a very long time. And it was just great to see the guys. It was great to reminisce about the 98 team, best team to ever walk on the field.
You were part of such an interesting corner of New York Yankees history. You played from 97 through 02, and in that run is when you guys made all of those World Series and, you know, winning three consecutive, getting back in 2001. And it was a time where, you know, it was just prior to social media, but you guys had so much scrutiny, so much attention, and so much pressure because you were the Beatles of baseball at that time and doing it in New York, where obviously the attention is highest. So when you look back, what are some of the things you take away from being part of that part of Yankees history, which is now still the last time they were truly a multi-year champion and dynasty?
Yeah, I look at it. It is the last baseball dynasty. I mean, we've had some good teams. Houston Astros right now are in their golden era of baseball. But I mean, to win three World Series in 4 and 5 years and go to 5 and 6 years, was truly, an incredible feat for that team. And we did it with, you know, I missed the 96 team. I actually was on the Texas Rangers who they went through to get that title. But you know, the core group of guys that were there really was, stuck around. Yeah, there's always players that come and go, but it really was a special time. And, you know, when I look back, yeah, I remember games here and there, but it's more the camaraderie. It's more, you know, I used to go to lunch with Scott Brosius and Andy Pettit quite often. And, you know, the first time we were all three there, it was like, hey, it's the old lunch groups back together. Things like that. That's what you really remember. It's not so much the games itself. Yeah, you remember World Series games and maybe a game here and there during the regular season, but it's more, you know, the friendships that we built. And when you make a true friend, I mean, in your heart, you love them, they love you. You know, you don't have to spend all the time together. You can spend some time apart, and then when you get back together, it's just like old times.
It strikes me that, yes, winning creates bonds, and what you guys accomplished certainly can strengthen bonds, but those Yankees teams always felt to me to be really close, apart from just the winning, that the chemistry was always really good, the knowledge of each other's roles, the respect of the leaders, the respect of the veterans that had been there. It always seemed to us on the outside that, boy, that the Yankees have such a tight group, and you don't hear about any friction or guys talking about one another being maybe about their own ego or something. What, you played in a lot of teams. Was it unique, the chemistry that those Yankees teams had?
It was. And it wasn't that there weren't any egos. Of course there were egos. It wasn't that we always got along. I mean, you don't put, you know, 30-plus type A personalities in a room every day with competition for 9 months and get along every single day. But the key to that team was we all had the same common goal, which was when we walked on the field, whether I was mad at the guy standing next to me or not, when you walked on the field, we all knew what our job was. And we were going to do whatever it took to win that day. That was, you know, our motto that year, and our motto through that run was, we play today, we win today. That was it. That was the motto. And whatever it took for us to win, that's what we did. You know, Joe Torre managed that way. We played that way. We believed that was our job. Our job was not to play baseball. Our job was to win.
The Subway Series in 2000 was probably the weakest of the teams that won a World Series in terms of win-loss record, where you guys were middle of the season. But then you turned the flip, you switched the switch in October and buried the Mets in five. Were you guys specifically honed in on this one? We've got to win, even if it's not our best selves, because it's a Subway Series?
Well, you know, you're really not ranking, you know, when you're playing, you're really not ranking yourself to previous years or anything like that. You're just, you're worried about job at hand. And we didn't think it really was, I don't want to say we didn't think it was a big deal, because we all knew it was a Subway Series. We knew how big this was going to be for the city and just for baseball in general. But there were a few statements made by the Mets. I remember one, I think it was Benny Agbayani actually called us old or over the hill or something. And, you know, when you're playing the multiple time world champions, you really don't want to poke the bear, because the bear may wake up. And, you know, not that we really needed, we needed additional motivation, but that kind of raised our eyebrows. And at that point, we, you know, we were still a very good team, a formidable team. And yeah, we took care of business in that 2000 World Series.
You crushed the Padres in 98, the Braves in 99, the Mets in 2000. And then by 01, a lot of the core starting to age, and some of the guys will end up retiring after the season. And yet you guys summit it yet again, 95 wins and back into the playoffs, having won the AL East. But right before you get to the playoffs is when September 11th happens. And it being the 22nd anniversary of 9/11, we wanted to chat with you about that experience. What do you remember from that day? And of course, just, you know, what it was like to be in the city, in New York City at that time.
Yeah. You know, to tell you the truth, it was a beautiful morning. I was living in Northern New Jersey. A cold front had just come through. It had blown out all the humidity. It was absolutely beautiful. And, you know, my wife and I were just sitting at home. The kids were at school. And, you know, just waiting to go to the ballpark. And then she got a phone call from a friend of hers that there was something going on. So we turned on the news and, you know, we saw the plane hit the second tower. And, you know, we were just in shock. How do you react in stuff like, you know, this is horror movie stuff. So, you know, first thing we did was we went and got our kids out of school. Why? Because we just wanted to be together. And it was a crazy time, because we didn't know exactly what was going to go on. I think we took 11 days off of baseball, and to tell you the truth, we didn't know if we were going to play. We didn't know what the right thing was to do. And you know, when Major League Baseball, we had some meetings, we had some phone calls, and when they decided to come back, I think it was 11 days later. We knew, you know, so they kind of did introductions. They did a moment of silence. And I think we started back in Chicago against the White Sox on the South Side. And we heard the response. We weren't even in New York. You know, the Mets, we just picked up our schedule right where we were on that day. We didn't turn the schedule back. Those were games that were just gone. You knew exactly where we were supposed to be. You know, we were supposed to be part of the healing process. We were entertainers now. Yes, we were baseball players, we were athletes, but our job was to help everyone get their mind off of, you know, the horrors of the world, at least for a few minutes, maybe for a couple hours. And the response from the fan bases across Major League Baseball, across the nation, they were absolutely remarkable. And we knew at that point that's exactly where we needed to be. We needed to be on the field to try and help the healing process, to try and give just a little bit of a break, maybe a little bit of happiness in a world that had just been turned upside down.
I remember thinking, as a New Yorker, this tragedy was all around us. You couldn't help but just feel it from a very intimate place, because people were passing away, you know, people that you knew, neighbors, family members, you know, friends, colleagues. You saw the funeral processions, you saw the ambulances, you saw the smoke still rising from ground zero, wherever you were in the Tri-State area. And then going to a ball game when game started up, I thought it was hard to know whether to cheer or not. Was it okay to not be mourning? I can't imagine what it was like to compete at that level. You guys have to be on such a high focus. Was it weird going to the ballpark and thinking, like, we've got to care about winning a baseball game?
maybe right at the beginning, because like I said, we didn't know if that was the right thing to do. And looking back on it, it was. But in a situation like that, what's right and wrong? I mean, no one had ever been through anything like this. And you, we, like I said, I mean, there was talk about canceling the rest of the baseball season. But I think, you know, being Americans and the camaraderie that that actually caused, I mean, you want to talk about bringing a nation together. My goodness, that's exactly what happened. You know, once you got back into it, you got back into competition, people start, you know, they started the cleanup. They, you know, it you could tell, okay, it's time to, we're not going to let this knock us down. They're not going to beat us by having a terror situation like this. No, we're Americans. We're going to stand up. We're going to stand next to each other. And that's kind of what happened. So, you know, once we got back into the flow, once we, you started playing a couple games, really after the first game, yeah, you're still remembering, because even when we were away from the ballpark, we were going through the same thing everybody else was. I mean, we knew people that had passed. If we didn't know people directly, we, you know, the chain was not very long till you got to someone that, that did know, and your heart went out to them, you know, and it's just one of those things that, you know, once we got back on the field, if you remember, even across the nation, even for teams that didn't, that weren't in the playoffs, that weren't, not even in New York, you know, you looked at it and it was, the outcry that we saw, the emotion that we saw, the passion that we saw for baseball may have never been higher, just simply because it gave all the fans across the nation, all the people across the nation, an outlet to let go of their emotions, because it, you know, there was such an emotional time in this country.
That's exactly right. And when Piazza hits the home run against the Braves, it was like every Mets fan felt
in New York. Yes.
Yeah, this is a moment to finally, like you said, give some of those emotions that you've been holding in, you give it some voice and kind of exhale. And then for you guys, you go on this amazing run, and it does not seem like you are a charmed Yankees team, because you start the playoffs down 0-2 against the A's. And now you've got to, you've lost the first two at Yankee Stadium, have to go to Oakland for game three. And it's like, wow, the upstart A's, they've got the dynasty on the ropes, and this is going to be it. And then 1-0, seventh inning, and Jeter makes the flip play, and it just seems to switch everything. What do you remember about Jeter's moment?
You know, it was such a frustrating series, because, you know, the A's were good. Yeah, they were young. You know, they had Giambi at first base, and he was destroying the baseball. It was just one of those times that, you know, we were trying to grind it out. We were probably trying too hard. That was probably the problem. But we just could not score a whole lot of runs against those guys. And Mike Mussina was dealing that game. I mean, he was, and, you know, we had the slight lead. You know, okay, if we can win this game, we can get on a roll. You know, and then Derek did, well, what Derek does, you know, that was a situation. It was a situation that probably only came up once or twice, maybe three times in the year. And you guys know the story that him and Joe Torre in spring training had said, you know, a ball in the right field corner just kind of migrate to the middle of the field. You never know what's going to happen. Shortstop's not really doing anything at that time. He sees the overthrow from Shane Spencer and makes the incredible play. And that was really something, you know, through this long run that we had, you know, like to go through it, you know, three World Series in a row, winning 4 of 5, going 5 of 6. It wasn't like it was a cakewalk all the time. We had our trials and tribulations. We had our tough times. We had teams that pushed us. But, you know, we had such a good core group of guys that believed in each other. You know, it's one thing to go into a situation and say, okay, I believe in myself to get this job done. I can make this pitch. I can get this base hit. That's not what makes a good team. What makes a good team is when you can trust the guy standing next to you and know that he can do it if you don't. And that actually takes pressure off yourself. That allows you to go ahead and relax. And a lot of times you're going to perform better in that situation. And that's really what happened. It was just one of those crazy runs that you look back, and to tell you the truth, even though I lived through it, you know, every pitch, every inning, every game, every year, you still look back at it and go, did all that really happen? You know, because now being, you know, 25 years from the 1998 team, you know, I'm just a fan of it now also.
That series is wild because the A's have all of that great young pitching talent. They threw Mulder out in game one, shut you guys down. Hudson in game two, they won 2-0. In game three, they had Zito. It's 1-0. And then the Jeter flip play kills that rally that they could have taken the lead or at least gotten a run on the board. You guys end up winning 1-0. So now you have one on the board. You win game four in Oakland as well at a blowout. And then it's game five back at Yankee Stadium. And it starts to feel like, wow, New York, the rebound after 9/11. This is 1 month after the towers. So it's still so raw. It is still so raw. And yet here's kind of this magical Yankee run starting to take place. So the flip play happens, game five, back in the house that Ruth built. You guys win that game. Okay, now you're on to the ALCS where you take on a 116-win Mariners team.
Yeah.
Set the modern record for wins. It's like, well, now, you know, the old guys finally met their match. And it was the opposite. You guys were the aggressors in that series. Going into the series, did you feel like, hey, we got the mojo back?
I think so. I mean, I think the momentum after coming back from 2-0, I think that the momentum had definitely, I don't want to say switched, because they had a lot of momentum also. But it was one of those things that, you know, the snowball started rolling down the hill and you're just simply not going to stop it. And we took care of business pretty good in that series. We knew that they were a good team, but that was one of those situations that at that point, once we got by Oakland, we won the three straight to win that series. We were a team of destiny.
So you guys end up getting the Mariners, knock them out in five, and now you're on to the World Series. Wow, the Yankees are back in the World Series. But here is a very formidable team themselves, the Diamondbacks. They have this great two-headed monster at the top of the rotation in Schilling and Randy Johnson. You guys have to start on the road in Arizona. You end up losing both of those games. 9-1 in game one, 4-0-9-2. You've mustered one run in two games against those two guys. And it's like, wow, again, the Yankees, the hopes are flickering. And then you come back to the Bronx, and again, it's like the magic. It's 2001. It's a month and a half now after the Towers. People are still trying to, you know, process all their feelings, but it's just like, oh my God, the Yankees are representing everything. And at that point in time, you guys have become a national favorite. Everybody in the country was rooting for you because you represented New York and the rebirth and what the country had just gone through. Those three games in the Bronx are all outrageous. 2-1 against the Diamondbacks in a win in game three, 4-3-10 in game four, 3-2-12. That's the Mr. November game for Derek Jeter, that just every night is like, how are they going to win this night? What do you remember from that three-game set where you took the lead in the 0-1 World Series?
It was crazy. I mean, I know that's not a strong enough word, but you know, you said it, that we became you know, ever the nation's favorite team, maybe for the first time ever, and maybe never again. Because, you know, the Bronx Bombers, you know, we were always the evil empire. You know, you go back, you know, the Bronx were burning back in the 70s and 80s. I mean, it was we were always the team that, you know, the big payroll, the big egos, the big city, you know, love to hate. And, you know, listen, teams love to have us come into their cities because we packed the ballparks every place we went. Ballparks were full. Most of the time they were to boo us. Now there were a lot of Yankee fans out there also, but that's fine. You know, that's you voicing your opinion, and that's what being an American is all about. And you know, you gotta love the passion. But those games were absolutely incredible. The home runs, you know, you're looking back on it now, knowing what's happened and being so far away from it again, you had to feel for Bong Young Kim. Yeah, he was the one that was giving up all the home runs, and he was never really the same after that. It was, you know, walk-off home runs, game-tying home runs, lefties, righties, it didn't matter. Just an absolutely remarkable turn of events to win those three games. And to tell you the truth, after we won those three games, we felt like, okay, we got this. We got this. We go back to Arizona, up 3-2. All the momentum is on our side. But it wasn't meant to be. The storybook ending, well, it didn't end the way everybody wanted it to.
It was wild, those three games. I mean, there's the Tino home run. Yeah. There's the Jeter home run. There's huge hits by Brocious, et cetera. Just like, yeah, there's just no way that these guys can be denied. And then you have two chances to wrap it up in Phoenix, and unfortunately, you couldn't do so. The game six that got away from you guys, and then game seven was Luis Gonzalez's bloop. And again, Mariano's coming in. You figure, okay, this is over. They're going to win this magical World Series. As you said, the Yankees have become a sympathetic figure, which they had never been in maybe the history, as you said.
Yeah.
And you guys were America's team. I wonder how you remember this. Do you remember that season fondly, or is it heartbreaking because you guys didn't finish the job like your other titles?
I think you could say both. I mean, obviously, it did not end the way we wanted it to. And you know what? Maybe everyone cheering for the New York Yankees wasn't meant to be. That's why maybe we didn't win. That's not how it's supposed to be. The Yankees are always the bad guys. And that's fine. You know that putting on the pinstripes. But, yeah, you still look at it fondly. I mean, it's still one of the most incredible World Series we've ever had. And I was blessed enough to play in many. And, you know, Randy Johnson coming back on no rest the next day after pitching game six, you know, you could see the guys, you know, him come open the bullpen door, him coming out, and you could almost just see us deflate a little bit. Even though he had absolutely nothing, he was still Randy Johnson. And, you know, it was crazy. It was crazy that we weren't able to. And of all people, you know, who knows when the last time Mo had blown a save? He had been so good, you know, unanimous Hall of Famer and deserved it. There's been a lot of guys that probably deserved it, but Mo was definitely one of those. And you know, he was also one of our best fielders on the team. You know, he played center field. I know later in his career, they did a lot of talk about how good of a center fielder he was, how he ran around the outfield. That's how he did his conditioning. He ended up hurting his knee right at the end of his career. He was one of the best athletes we had on the team. And he fielded the ball on the pitcher's mound. You know, he was like a shortstop. And he had made that play so many different times. He was always so calm, cool, and collected. But footwork wasn't quite right. Grip wasn't quite right. You know, if everything happens the way it happened, you know, hundreds of times in the past, Gonzalez doesn't even come up to bat. The game is over. But it wasn't meant to be. It doesn't take away from anything that we did. It doesn't definitely, you know, the Arizona Diamondbacks, we made them earn it. That's for sure. But, yeah, it was just one of those things that it, you know, the storybook ending just wasn't quite there.
It's such a special role that you hold in American sports lore, and specifically New York sports lore. Those Yankee teams are so beloved. You were such an important part of a bullpen that was consistently one of the best in baseball, if not the best. So many high leverage situations you got into, especially at the old stadium in the Bronx in October, all those moments. And, you know, you got to be part of three championships and multiple runs of the World Series as well. You got to feel, and then coming back for Old Timers Day, like, what a charmed life for the timing for you to have been part of such a remarkable piece of baseball history.
Yeah, I mean, blessed way more than I ever deserved. That's for sure. It's you know, again, I look back on it, and, you know, I know when I went through it, you know, a lot of the stuff that I remember, like I said before, it's not really games. It's clubhouse. It's hanging out, you know, shagging fly balls in BP. It's going to lunch with the guys and just the camaraderie. But, you know, to go back and really look and remember each individual situation is really cool. And it's something that I'll continue to do. And because I hadn't really done it, you know, I was always, you know, when Derek said, in his Hall of Fame speech, one of the problems he had, he wished he could have been in the moment more. and remember, you know, kind of remember what was going on. I was the same way. I wasn't about, you know, what was going on, you know, what happens next. And even once I retired, it was the same thing. Okay, let's figure out what, you know, what am I going to do for the rest of my life? Whether it's broadcasting, whether it's coaching, whatever, you know, let's see what's going on. Let's keep moving forward. Let's keep pushing. But it's also kind of cool to be able to step back and look and remember exactly what went on and, you know, the emotions and the feelings we had at those times and be able to enjoy them, even if I really couldn't do it at the moment. I played with Jay Bell with the Mets. And Jay was he's a baseball lifer. You know, Jay, you know, even at the end of his career, he's getting at he was beating the clubhouse guys to the ballpark. And he had walked up to me one time and he goes, did you believe what's happened? And I had played against Jay when he was a Pirate, when I was Atlanta Brave, and we had gone back and forth. And he actually had come up to me late in that series in 2001. And, you know, just passing on the field, he goes, can you believe this world? I had a tough time remembering what was going on because I was focused on what was going on now. But now afterwards, to take a step back and look and see exactly what happened and kind of reminisce and kind of enjoy and go through the emotions again, that was something that we did at Old Timers Day. They did a great video tribute on the board and I didn't pull a tear, but I came close just remembering what went on and that was really us doing it.
Yeah. It's an amazing slice of baseball history, Yankees history, New York history, and it's American history, really, in general with 9/11 and the 2001 series. So really cool that you could stop on by. For those that want to relive some of Old Timers Day, Yankee fans, Believe in the Bronx podcast with Pete Caldera and Mike Stanton. They've got an episode coming out from Yankee Stadium where they recorded it for Old Timers Day. So that's coming out. All places that you get your podcast, Believe in the Bronx pod, and you kind of relive the emotions there about what's going on in the moment, right?
Oh yeah, it was a blast. It was a blast, and we didn't get to do it out on the field. Unfortunately, the weather cooperated with us through the ceremony, but once the ceremony was over, that's when the heavens opened up, and
right.
I think they had about a 2-hour rain about 2-hour rain delay after the ceremony, so. It was just so special going back. I mean, the new ballpark is absolutely beautiful. It's spectacular. This is only the second time I've been there. And I think the first time was right after it opened. It was in the off season, so it wasn't even in season. Do miss the old park though. Yeah, it was kind of ratty. It was special in its own way, but the new ballpark is special too.
Had the soul, the old Bronx,
yeah,
old ballpark.
Had the ghost.
Had the ghost. Check it out. The Believe in the Bronx podcast hosted by Mike Stanton and Pete Caldera is available all places that you get your pods. Excellent career that Mike had and 3 World Series championships to his name with the New York Yankees. Mike, this is great. Thanks so much for joining us.
DA, thanks for having me, man.
Thanks to Mike Stanton for his time here with the New York Accent crew. And it's interesting to hear him talk about wishing he was more in the moment and Jay Bell, a guy that was more in the moment. And I just think, you know, we all have this propensity specifically today to be a step ahead. You know, everything is moving faster. Our cell phones are in front of us. And so we've always got our nose down looking into something like email or social media or updating the internet or the weather or whatever on all of our apps, etc. But you know, even back then, it's always hard to live in the moment and not be focused on the next thing. But I think for Mike, you know, talking about how maybe he wishes he were a little bit more like that, it's got to be really hard to be an athlete and to be in the moment because you're so wired to just move into the next day, the next at bat, the next whatever that battle is, whatever that next challenge is, you just have to attack it. You know, for a baseball player, that game is done and then you're already on to the next day, the next game. You've got a game every single day for the most part. And if you're a starting pitcher, I mean, you're talking about the next at-bat. Even if you're a relief pitcher, it's the next at-bat, it's the next inning, it's the next pitch. So athletes more than anybody, and maybe baseball players more than any other athlete, are just so wired to just be thinking about the next instead of ever having a moment to exhale and think about the moment, be in the moment. So, you know, not surprising that Stanton, amongst other baseball players or athletes, just would have a hard time with that. Normal humans do, but certainly a baseball player does as well. I don't think you had to be a Yankees fan to really appreciate that run in 2001. Out of all of them, it felt like they were supposed to win the World Series that year. Of all the years they were supposed to, because of that feeling that the entire city had, and I think the country did as well, of just the Yankees representing a city in New York that had just been emotionally carved up, unfortunately, for so many reasons, as we all know, and the hangover of all the tragedy and the events of September the 11th, that it was kind of all wrapped up into that Yankees run, of the fact that they seemed down so many times but always rose up to see another day, was really symbolic in a beautiful way for New York and I think for the country as a whole. And you never try to attach too much importance to something like sports, but there was an element of the 0-1 Yankees that seemed so perfectly encapsulating what New York was trying to do, and that was just kind of keep picking itself up over and over and over again, despite the odds being stacked against them. So even though I grew up a Mets fan, I certainly appreciated the 2001 Yankees run, and I think it was really important for a lot of New Yorkers just to see a team a couple months later that just refused to give up and just seemed to have the heart of a champion, and they refused. And the fact that Luis Gonzalez's looper ended up beating them in such an un-Yankee fashion, Mariano blowing a save like that, just seems, you know, like it wasn't really the fitting end. It wasn't the appropriate end. It was the official end, but it wasn't the appropriate end to what that run was all about. But either way, they created magic, no matter if they won the championship or not that year. Thanks so much to Mike Stanton for joining us on this episode of New York Accent. I'm Damon Amendola, DA. You can follow me on Twitter at DA on CBS or on Instagram at Damon Amendo. We keep you updated on the new episodes coming your way and how to get them, so you can follow me on social media. You can also catch me weekday mornings on CBS Sports Radio. Thanks to executive producer Bryce Gelman. We will see you next week for another episode of New York Accent. This is an original Odyssey podcast.
Looking for a sign to start that summer home refresh finally? Look no further than Blinds.com. Early access to Blinds.com's 4th of July mega sale is happening now. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments with upfront pricing, no showroom markups, and no pushy salespeople in your home. Whether you're a DIY warrior, prefer the white glove treatment, or somewhere in between, Blinds.com makes it easy. Our virtual design experts can help you make the perfect selection on your schedule. Plus, we can even handle everything from measure to install. Style every room effortlessly with classic shutters for living spaces, blackout for bedrooms, motorized options for total convenience, shades for your patio too. With over 25 million windows covered and 40,000 five-star reviews, Blinds.com is the trusted name in custom window treatments, all backed by our 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop early access to Blinds.com's 4th of July mega sale now. Save up to 40% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Dollar Shave Club is the real grooming MVP. Their six-blade razor gives you the closest, most comfortable shave. The four-blade features Swift Rinse Tech for longer, thicker hair. And the handle has a no-slip 360-degree diamond pattern grip for comfort and control. Shave butter works great with their razors. It's translucent for precision and delivers a long-lasting glide that hydrates the skin. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun and use code HOMERUN for 20% off your order of $20 or more. Plus free shipping. Whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
We know there's a lot that can go on during one night of baseball. Long home runs, epic pitching performances, catches that defy space, time, and gravity.
Climbing the wall, did he catch it? He did!
But what if you could get all of that summarized in a quick, concise, and at least we think, funny podcast that's under 10 minutes? Check out MLB.com's Morning Lineup. It runs Monday through Friday mornings on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you love listening most.